Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Samach Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 4 lines from the top of Daf Samach Ches. You'll notice a diamond and also a double underline marking. In the margin, we have a nosei, a topic heading, slash mivneh, structural note, which reads as follows. The diamond are memros deravashi, Bishmom shel Sabi Demasa Mechosya. Vashi quotes the elders of the city of Mechosya, and these comments are Be'inyan Mashkon, have to do with the issue of collateral. Number one, Stam Mashkon Shana. We will be taught that an unqualified Mashkon is for 1 year. Number two, Mashmois Hamilo Mashkanto. Etymology, what is behind the word, what is the intent of the word mashkon per se. The Gemara will also be asking lamai nafgamina, and we've dashed underlined that in each case. What practical difference is there in these particular points? Now the Gemara. 4 lines from the top, Omar, Rav, Ashi, Omru li sabi de fubadis de masa mechasya. It was told to me by the elders of mechasya. Stam mashkanto shosa. A mashkon without any stated time frame is understood to be for 1 year. Lamai nafgamina. What practical halachic implication is there? Di ochil lo shosa. Motzi Mesalik Lei. If the lender used the mashkon for 1 year, then the borrower can remove the lender from it. Vi lo, and if not, lo motzi Mesalik Lei. He cannot remove him. Rashi says de lo motzi Mesalik Lei kol shnoso. For that entire year, vafilu ba'asur de mesalki, even in towns, even in places where the practice was, upon payment of the loan, the lender is removed. This is, of course, a topic that we discussed at length in previous shiurim, the issue of mashkon ba'asur de mesalki. The point here is that even in such places, but within that year, the first year, the lender remains with that collateral, with that land collateral. The Omar Ravashi, Omru li savi de masa machasya, my mashkanta. What is behind the word mashkanta? Answer, de shchuno gabe. It is. Dwelling by him. That's a literal translation. And we'll explain that a little more momentarily. Lamai nafgamina, what practical knowledge is there for us in understanding that? Ladina de bar metzra, regarding the law of bar metzra. The law of bar metzra tells us in general, before we apply it to this topic, if a person intends to sell a parcel of land, the first caller, or the first one who has first rights to buy that land, the one who has first rights to buy that land is the one who shares a common border with the land being sold. Hence the word metzra, metzar, is a border. Now, let's see how to apply that over here with one who received a parcel of land as a mashkon, as collateral. So Rashi, on the third narrow line from the top, Tishchuna Gabei, Ein Shochein Koroiv Mimenu. There isn't a closer neighbor than him, than the Malve, the lender who received the land as collateral. He is literally upon the land. If the borrower wants to sell that land, Ein Bebal Meitzorea Shochein Toiv Liknoisa Kazeh. And there isn't any better neighbor choice than this one, than the Malveh. Hence, Dino de Bar Mitzra has relevance, has application to a lender who has this Mashkon, and that's all included in the word Mashkon, Deshchuno Gabei. He is the closest neighbor to it. Omar Rova, we continue in the Gemara. Here's a point. You'll notice we have a long point marking. Another aspect of this section of Gemara is featured on the side under our Nosei / Mivne heading. Rova Poisek Shalosh Halachas Binyan Ribis. Rova issues halachic rulings concerning three points within the laws of interest. Omar Rava, Leis Hilchasa, Lo Kitarshi Papunoi. What happens here in the Gemara, first he lists off the halachas, and then they will be explained as we go on, and you can see that with the double underline marking. So first the list, he says, Lo Kitarshi Papunoi, Velo Kishtori Michuznoi, Velo Kechakire Narshoi. Now, Rava said that we do not follow the Tarshi Papunoi, Kitarshi Punoi, Kitarshi the Rav Papa. So just to remind ourselves, this is something we learned in the past. Rav Papa was a beer manufacturer. He manufactured high quality beer. There was a low season and a high season. We'll say the low season in the month of Tishrei, when you could buy beer, but it was cheap. My understanding, it wasn't quite fermented yet, wasn't really ready as good beer ought to be. So there was that's the low season, low rates in Tishrei. It sits around for half a year, ferments, becomes really good. And in Nisan, the rates go up. Rav Papa would sell his beer during the low season at high season price and wait for collection. In other words, he wouldn't insist on payment immediately. So what, as far as Rav Papa is concerned, his reasoning for allowing that. However, we say, why look at things from Rav Papa's perspective? Look at it from the customer's perspective. Namely, the customer, in effect, is paying now a higher rate in exchange for the willingness on the part of the beer seller to wait. Well, that's what we call that smacks of ribbis. In other words, you're getting something now and paying more for it, even though you could buy it for less right now. But why are you paying more? Because the one who's giving you the beer is willing to wait for payment. That's called agar notar, getting more in exchange for waiting for the payment. Now, we have learned in the past that that's not a case of ribis d'oraisa, because this is in the context of a sale. But nevertheless, the increased payment in exchange for waiting for the payment, an increased price in exchange for waiting for payment, is a ribis problem. So Rava rules that you cannot do that. Number two, Shtore Mechuzna. Mechuzna is a reference to the townspeople of Mechuzah. What was their practice? So the Gemara says, first we'll read the Gemara and then we'll look at Rashi. Dezakfile l'revocha akarna. They anticipated the revach, the profits, and attached the profits to the principal price of the item, the kasvilei b'shtara, and then wrote that in a document that that's how much is owed. So that if you look in Rashi, a few lines up from here, dezakfi revocha karna, shekainim pragmatio mibale batim. The practice there was people would buy merchandise from producers, v'noisnim l'tagorim l'machzis schar, and then the merchandise was given to salesmen who would eventually share in half the profits, v'shomen, and there was an assessment made, kach v'kach schar yebohen. There was a calculation regarding how much profit would be realized from these items. V'zoikfin machzis schar im hakeren. There's a principal value of the item. Let's say the item in question is worth $100. The profit, the total profit of the item would be $20. The owner of the item, i.e. the one who is giving it to the salesman, the owner of the item will get half the profits. So he anticipates getting back not only the principal value, the $100, but also $10, which is half the profits. That amount, Rashi goes on, v'kosfin b'shtar, and they would write in a document, ploni chayov leploni kach v'kach lizman ploni. Salesman so and such is obligated to owner of merchandise so-and-so, kach v'kach, in our example, $110, lizman ploni, sometime down the line after the item is sold. So that you can see here, the problem is that the salesmen are getting merchandise worth $100, and the profit would be split between the two of them, and the owner is going to get back, the owner of the merchandise is going to get back 110, as we featured in our example. So they got merchandise worth $100, then there was a waiting period for the sales to take place and realize the profits, and after the waiting period, the owners get back $110. That's and the salesman became obligated to that. And we say miyemar. Continuing in the Gemara, miyemar dehave revocha. Who says that there will be any profits to begin with? And even so, they become obligated to pay back $110. So that they received, just to repeat, they received merchandise worth $100 and are obligated to pay back $110. That, and all of that is as a result of the waiting aspect. The owner of the merchandise was willing to wait until the merchandise was sold. And getting more in return, in exchange for waiting for payback, is a ribbis problem. Continuing in the Gemara, Amar le mor bor ameimar le Ravashi. The son of Ameimar says to Ravashi, Abba Ovid Hochi, father, namely Ameimar himself, he did things like this. V'chi osu lekamei mehemon lehu. And when the merchants would come back to Ameimar and say, we didn't make any profits, Ameimar would believe them. So they wouldn't be obligated. They said, we didn't profit, so there's no extra that's going to be returned. Omar Lei, Suravashi says to the son of Ameimar, Tenach Hecho Diisei Lididei. That's fine and good when Ameimar is alive, that he believes the merchants that went out to sell the goods, that they realized no profits. Ishachiv v'nofil shtara kami yasmi mai. What will be if Amemar dies? And that star that we read about in Rashi, the star which indicates that the salesmen are to return principal plus owner profit, plus, as we said before, merchandise was worth $100, profit anticipated for the owner $10. A shtar, a contract, that would be inherited by Amemar's heirs, would simply see that they have a call or right to collect from these merchants. They're not Amemar. They're not necessarily going to believe the merchants, and they'll hold a shtar which entitles them to collect more than was given to the merchants at the outset. What are you going to say then? Well, have a kishkoga shiyotzim ifnei asholit v'noch nafshei d'amemar. We're not going to translate this literally, but the pasuk that's cited is used as a reference to an unintended statement was made, but a person has to be very careful with what they say. And in Rav Ashi's question to Mor Bar Meimar, he suggested, well, what if Amemar dies? What's going to be then? And sure enough, Amemar died. And we take a look at Rashi. Tenach Hecho De'isei L'didei. You can see we have Rashi featured with a double star. Im Yehei Avicha Kayim L'zmana Piron Shu Chosin U'ma'aminam. I understand things will be fine if your father is around when the time for payment of that contract comes due. He's a pious individual. He trusts them to their word. But what if he dies? The heirs will attempt to collect the entire amount written in the contract, which was principal plus profit. And you can see that, that arrangement is a problem. And hence, Rava's ruling that the shtare mechuzna is not acceptable. Hakire narshoi, this is the third point that Rava made. That Rava said that we will not follow hakire narshoi. Now, a word about hakirus. Hakirus is an arrangement, not to be confused with arisus. Arisus is a sharecropper. Hakirus is an arrangement where a landowner gives the land to someone to cultivate the land, and the one who cultivates the land obligates himself to pay a fixed amount of a harvest to the owner of that land. And that fixed amount is to be delivered by this worker to the owner, whether or not the land produces, whether the land produces very little or the land produces a lot. So now, that's standard hakirus. Hakirin arshoi, what was their practice? The kasvi hochi, they would write the following. Mishkein le planyo are le planyo, so-and-so love, so-and-so borrower, entrusted his land as collateral to so-and-so lender. The hodar chokro mine, and then the borrower served as the chocher of the land. The borrower then worked the land. Now, what is happening? You have a borrower who is going to have to pay back the principal of his loan, and in addition to paying back the principal of his loan, he's also going to be providing a fixed amount of produce from this field. The lender of the land, I should say, the lender of who lent the money constituting the loan, who is now, we'll say, hiring the borrower, so to speak, to work the land. Is it the lender's land? Emas kana de akne nihale. When in the world did the lender ever acquire the land, that we should consider it his land, that he should have the right to then makne, transfer the land to this borrower in hakira terms. That never happened. So it comes out then, as we tried to illustrate before, that you have a malveh, someone who lent money. He's going to get back the principal of money, and he's also getting back a fixed amount of crop from a land that is not, technically speaking, is not really his. Well, so if you're giving, if you're loaning money, whatever principal amount, and getting back principal plus crops, that smacks of interest. And hence Rava ruled not to do that. For Idna the Kokasvi Hochi, nowadays, that the following is the practice. Kanino mine veshohino kamo idni, for hodar chochro shapir domi. Regarding this, say, arrangement of a malve getting land as collateral, it's written that in the contract that the land was held by the lender for a while, and after the land was in the possession of the lender, kamo idnin, a number of idnin, idna is a term referring to periods of time, so that the land was in the possession of the lender for a while. And Rashi adds, very importantly, Shohino kamu idnin biyad amalva v'osa hu v'ochav anachyaisa, and the lender himself cultivated the land and benefited from the crops, and in exchange for the benefit of the crops, a fixed amount was subtracted from the principal of the loan on for each time period, say each year. And then afterwards, the borrower was hired to work the land as a chocher. That is okay, because in that situation, it appears, notice the language of their contract was kanino mine. He acquired it. It's as if it belongs to the malveh. And at that point, Rashi adds, we're talking at a time after 3 years it was in the possession of the malveh. What difference does it make whether the malveh continues to work the land or the loveh, or the borrower, works the land? And the reason for allowing this, the Gemara says, Kadeshalo Tinil Delis Bifne Lovin, so as not to figuratively lock the door in front of people that want to borrow money. So that to encourage people to lend out money, this situation would be tolerated. The Gemara, though, ends off saying, Valav Milsahi, even under those circumstances, that it remains in the hands of the Malva for a while, where he's using the land, and only later on is it given to the Lova to cultivate on a Hakira basis, it is not allowed. Rashi says, Ribis Gemuri, this is full, that would be full-fledged interest. And the reason for that is because as far as the return is concerned, there is no element of doubt. When you're talking about Hakiris, there's a fixed amount that Lova is going to be delivering to the Malva in addition to whatever principal balance of loan is left. And when you have a guaranteed return, you have a problem of ribis. The Mishnah. Ein Moshivin Chenvoni L'matzischar. Before we read further into the Mishnah, let's just allow ourselves to glance at the side. There are topic heading, the Nosei, Ein Moshivin Chenvoni L'machzischar. Rashi elaborates on what the problem is of providing merchandise to a vendor who will sell it, and you and the vendor will split the profits. And that arrangement is not allowed. And why not? The high iska palga milve upalga pikodon. When a vendor accepts merchandise from the owner for sale purposes and splitting the profit, it's understood, there's a given, that the vendor accepts unqualified responsibility, unconditional responsibility for 50% of the principal value of that merchandise. The other 50% he receives as something we term a pikodon, an entrusted item, where there is conditional responsibility. That means, when we speak about unconditional responsibility, that means that if some onus, some catastrophe or circumstances beyond his control causes the loss of the merchandise, so the vendor who's hired to sell the merchandise, he will have to pay 50% of the value of that merchandise. Even if, as we said, even if onus was responsible for its destruction. The other half of the principal is called pikodon, and so if the merchandise was worth $100 and some type of onus came about destroying it completely, the vendor will have to pay $50 in compensation. That is the way we look at the principal value of the merchandise. But now we continue in our note. Utmuras, and in exchange for, utmuras chatzi hamilve shehu mekabel, in exchange for half of the merchandise, which in effect is a milva. A milva is a loan. When you receive something and have to return it in unconditional terms, that's called a loan. When you borrow money, you have to pay back the money. We don't care what happens to you and your assets in the interim. You have to pay back the loan under all circumstances. Well, in exchange for the half that is the loan, hachenvoni mashkia keich v'tircha b'chatzi apikodon, the vendor is willing to invest energies and in the other half of the merchandise, v'yachad im hakeren shehu machzir lebala bayis itein hachenvoni chatzi horevach. And if you recall, we mentioned that the owner of the merchandise and the store owner will split the profits. So when we look at the merchandise, as we were suggesting before, half loan and half entrusted item, the half that's a loan is the half from which he, the vendor, will take his own profits. The half that's been entrusted to him is namely the other half. From that, the owner will realize his profits. I think it's worth noting that what we are saying is in an analysis. In reality, it's all the merchandise is being sold to the public. No one's looking at half of the carton is considered a milvin, half the carton is considered a picodon. It's all one box of merchandise, but in analytical terms, it is as we said. So that at the end of the day, the vendor, the chenvoni, is going to be returning to the owner of the merchandise the entire principal value and profit as well. So what do you see happening over here? You see that there was, in effect, a loan. We said half of the merchandise we were viewing as a loan. It's from that half that the vendor was going to make profit and enjoy the benefit of making money. in exchange for that, he will return the principal plus 50% of the profits that he realized to the owner. So the owner gave him merchandise worth $100 and is going to get back, after $20 of profit was realized, he's going to get back 10 of those $20 in profit. Well, that's ribis. That is a problem of ribis. Once again, we're not saying ribis doraisa, but through the way we're looking at it, there is more returned than was originally received. And the willingness to return more was because he, the chenvoni, the vendor, was benefiting from having received a loan. So when you are paying back more than you received in the context of having received a loan, that's interest. And of course you have also the time element, that the owner of the merchandise is not expecting immediate payment. He's willing to wait a while till the stuff is sold and the profits are realized. And all of that together creates a problem of ribis. Amir Sashem will see that explained when we look into the Rashi. This Rashi, in my opinion, is fundamental for understanding numerous sugyas throughout the Shas that speak about this type of case. So now, that having been said, let us go to the Mishnah. Ein moshivin chenvoni l'machzis schar. V'lo yitein mois likach bohen perois l'machzis schar. One is not to give merchandise to a vendor for the purpose of then sharing equally in the profits, nor is one to give cash to someone to buy produce and then sell the produce for profit and share in the profits, so that you don't give money to someone to buy produce, make money from it, and then get back not only the principal value that you gave him, that same amount of cash that you gave him, but also half the profits. Elo im kein noisin loischaroi kepoyol. This arrangement, or these arrangements that we've noted, giving merchandise to someone or cash to someone to buy merchandise, will not be allowed unless you pay him a fee, so that the fee that you pay him, you've hired him for pay to make profits, so that the profits are being returned or being given to you in exchange for you having paid him a fee. That already is a legitimate arrangement, and that circumvents or obviates the ribis problem. Let us look at Rashi together. Rashi on the Mishnah, the last narrow line. Ein moshivin chenvoni l'machzischar, lo yoimar balabayas lechenvoni. An owner of merchandise, he's called the balabayas, should not say to a chenvoni, a vendor, Hare peros nimkorim b'shuk arbasoyim b'sela. Fruits are sold in the market four sa'a per sela. V'ata merchon b'chanus pruta pruta u'mistakir sa'a. And you will sell them in unit as opposed to bulk quantity, so that after you finish selling it, you'll end up having profited an extra saw. So I'm giving you four saw to sell, and four saw cost a sella. So the principal value of what I'm giving you is one sella, and the profit will be the equivalent of an extra saw. So if that would be an extra, we'll say, a quarter of a sella profit. So I'm giving you one sella worth of merchandise, and eventually you will profit one and a quarter, be an additional quarter selah profit, and we'll split that quarter saw profit. Quarter selah profit. Selah is a type of coin, saw being a measure of a dry measure. So he says, "Heloch peros v'shev u'mechor tomid v'arevach nachalok." Here, take the peros. If it's a four saw of peros, take the peros that are worth one selah, sell them on a constant basis, and the profit we will split. So that arrangement is not allowed. The taima de milsa, the reasoning behind that, mishum damrinon lekamon, it is stated later in the Masechta, high iska. Iska is this arrangement where you hire, where you give merchandise to someone to sell and split profits. Iska is a reference to the merchandise. The merchandise given to a salesman, palga milve upalga pikadon, is viewed as half loan, under, we say, loan terms, which means unconditional responsibility, and half is a pikadon, is simply viewed as entrusted. Stam hamekabel pragmatio lemachzis char, the standard, the unqualified one who receives pragmatia merchandise for the sale and splitting profits with the owner of the merchandise. Mekabel of achrayes chatzi hakeren ba'insin vizula. He accepts on himself unconditional responsibility if anything should happen to it through ones, through destructive causes beyond his control, or market drop in value, zula, cheapening. So if the merchandise was worth one sela, one half sela, he guarantees, this vendor guarantees to return. Hilko hahi palga keva de mechayev boinsin milvehu etzlo. Since there's unconditional responsibility concerning that half, it's viewed as a loan. Shere shuma he etzlo b'mois kishara shuk. That half is that half amount is a result of shuma, an assessment made according to the current market prices. V'dina litel chatzi schar, and the owner is going to get half of the profits. Nimtza, the result of this is misasek bechetzi shebala bayis shupikadon. This vendor is willing to invest energies in the half of the merchandise that is the balabayas. Now, what do you mean half is the balabayas? Everything was the balabayas, but half of it is viewed as pikadon. That's as if the balabayas entrusted half as an item to be watched. When we speak about that, he's not going to watch it, he's going to sell it. But it's not a case of unconditional responsibility. So this Chenvoni is willing to invest energies to produce profit, invest energies on the half belonging to the balabayas, shupikonon etzlo, it is by him, by the vendor, with the conditional responsibility. Why is he willing to do that? B'schar hamtonas mois hamilve, in exchange for the owner waiting for the 50% that is in effect alone. Lefika chaser, since there's going to be more returned to the owner than was originally given to him, in exchange for the owner's willingness to wait for the payback, that creates the problem. That creates the iser. The Mishnah continues. Ein moshivin tarnagolin lemechza. V'ein shomin agolin usyochim lemechza. Ela imkein noisein loy schar amoloi umezoinoi. Once again, we look at Rashi, who gives a thorough explanation. Ein moshivin tarnagolin lemechza, loshum, to assess, beitzim, bedomim, Lebal hatarnegolis lo shiva alehem legadil efrechim. One person owns eggs, fertilized eggs. He gives the eggs with a fixed value, an assigned value to the eggs, to the owner of a chicken that will incubate the eggs. And from the hatched eggs, legadil efrechim, to raise chicks, lemachzischar ma sheyu efrechim shovin yoiser al demei abeitzim. So if the beitzim, the eggs that were given, were worth $10, and the chicks that hatch, the chicks that grow from those eggs are worth $20, so you've got $10 in profit, and the owner of the eggs and the owner of the chicken will split that $10 of profit, so that the owner of the eggs will get back his principal value of the eggs, which we said in our example, $10 plus half the profits plus $5. This arrangement is not allowed. The hayil v'ze mekabel olov achrayis chatzi demei abeitzim im miskalk lo yomusu. The owner of the chicken accepted upon himself half the principal value of the eggs if they should go bad or the chicks should die. Hence, 50% of that principal value is a loan. He accepted unconditional responsibility. Sharei kishen nishaymin olov b'domim me'achshov demeimo olov b'milve. When we said that the eggs are assessed and a price attached to them, and that's a fixed price, so you have you now have what's in effect a loan. The eggs are given to the owner of the chicken as a loan. The result of that is that the owner of the chicken is willing to raise the chicks and give half the profits to the owner in exchange for the owner's willingness to wait for the return of that value. So the Mishnah says that is not allowed. And that's what Ein Moshiv and Tarnagol Lemechsa, we read that already, and we also read the Ein Shomin Agolim Musyoch Lemechsa. It's the same idea. This has to do with raising of calves and siochim, young animals, which the hired person would raise them, and then as we said with the eggs, the agolim and siochim were evaluated and a price attached to them in their young state. They would grow, develop, and mature, be worth more, and that would then could be sold for that increased amount of money. That profit would be split in addition to the principal value of the agolim and siochim, the young donkeys, along with the calves. That principal value would be returned to the original owner. That arrangement is also not allowed. Ela imke noisin loischara molo umazono. Unless the original owner of these creatures would pay the man hired a fee, a separate fee for raising them, and provide mizono, chicken feed, as well. If that is done, so then the arrangement we mentioned would be allowed. Then, as we explained earlier, the return of the profit is because he got paid for troubling himself. He was simply a hired hand for producing the profit. Aval, mekablin magola musyachim lemechza, umegadlin oisanachu mishuloshin v'chamorat shetei tayenis. What would be allowed is someone is entrusted with calves and young donkeys without assigning a value to them, namely if they would die, so he wouldn't have to pay anything. If someone is hired under those circumstances where there's no shuma, no assessed value to which he becomes responsible, but rather if they die, he won't have to pay anything. And he raises them and they grow and they are worth much more. They are then sold. The principal plus the profits can be given to the owner. Now, I think it's we can make the assumption that there was a known value to the agolim and siochim in that case, to the calves and the young donkeys in that case. But it wasn't a value that was established for the purpose that if they die, the hired hand would have to compensate. That, no. So after they're raised, the hired hand would return the principal value, and plus splitting the profits, that would be allowed, even if he doesn't get an additional fee for that. The Mishnah also mentions that they are to be raised in the case of the calf until they're a third of their full size, and the donkey until it's capable of bearing a burden. Prior to that, you cannot, we'll see more about this in the Gemara, but prior to that, you cannot force a division whereby the hired worker would stop his services. In the Mishnah, mention was made of paying the hired hand kepoyel. So the Braisa adds, tana kepoyel botel. Now, kepoyel botel is mashma, someone who is going to get paid for sitting and doing nothing. My kepoyel botel, what do you mean by sitting and doing nothing? Here this guy isn't sitting and doing nothing. He's working, troubling himself to take the animals in and out, to bring food to them. We saw before, in the case of the chenvoni, to bring produce to the market. So what do you mean by he's being paid like a poel botel, paying someone to do nothing? The Gemara explains at the top of Omid Beis, Omar Abaye, kepoel botel shel oisa melocha de botel mina. We pay him the amount that someone who is engaged in that particular area, he's hired to be a store vendor. How much would a person like that be willing to take? How much less would he be willing to take to sit and not bother selling the produce? Rashi says at the top, Imhoya Nagur or Napoch, if he was a carpenter or a blacksmith, Kam Odom Roisalita Libotam Imloch Kaveda Kazu, how much would a person be willing to take to desist from this arduous, intense labor intensive activity, the last is melacha kalan, to do something of a much lighter nature? How much would a person take for that? That is how much you pay. That's how much you have to pay the people featured in the Mishnah. So you're not expected to pay them, we'll say, full wages as if you were hiring an outsider, but you pay them the amount a person would be willing to take to do something lighter than the activities that are described in the Mishnah. Each one accordingly. In the Mishnah we had two examples in the opening of the Mishnah. One where we said you don't hire a chenvoni to sell your fruits and split the profits. And we have the second example, you don't give cash to someone to go buy fruits and then sell them and then split the profits. Utsricha, I need both examples. And we have a long marking, because in the course of these lines of more, we'll be featuring why we need both examples. Had we taught the restriction regarding the chenvoni, that's a person that was given the fruits. He wasn't, this hired person wasn't expected to go out and buy the fruits. You gave him the fruits already, ready made, so to speak. Just go and sell them. If we were taught the case of chenvoni, chenvoni who the sagi le kapoyel botel. There, I would say that the poyel botel rate to pay him, in addition to the sharing of the profits, mishum de lo nofish tirche, because he isn't working too hard. He's not. You've given him the fruits, or you're providing him with the merchandise already. Avol mois likach moen peros, but the arrangement where you give someone cash to trouble himself to buy fruits and then to profit with them, the nofish tirche, there's more exertion necessary. Emo, I would have thought, without the Mishnah, lo sagi lekapol botel, that the poel botel rate of compensation is not enough. V'i tana mois likach ben peros, and had we taught that case, and taught that you pay him kepoyel botel, have amina, I would have thought, hosam hu de boy kepoyel botel. There, since there's a mishum de nofish tirche, there's a lot of effort. So there, you have to pay him the poyel botel rate. Av chenvoni de lo nofish tirche, but the case of the chenvoni, where you're giving him the fruits already purchased, where he doesn't have to work very hard, that's a less labor-intensive activity. Emo, I would have thought, sagi le b'mashu b'almo, that it would have been enough to pay him as his fee something of a negligible value. Tafilu lo tovo limoyola b'tzir, even if you invited him to literally dip in fish brine, in other words, you invite him over for a little snack, where he came and ate by you one dried fig, that would be enough as his fee. Tzricha. The Mishnah tells us, no, you have to pay him kepoel botel. I might note that this suggestion of tovalimoyola b'tzir v'lochalimoyola grogeres is not an example that the Gemara just pulled out of a hat. In fact, it is an amount suggested by one of the Tanoim that we will see later. Apparently, our Mishnah is not of that school of thought, not of that thinking, but it is an amount suggested later on by another Tana. And without any further ado, here we have in the parentheses a simon, a mnemonic, a couple key words that will help one remind one of what will be coming up in the Gemara. Kamo easy v'tarnegolin marilin simon tonu rabbanan kamo hu scharo. You see, the word kamo was from the beginning of the parentheses mnemonic. So kamo hu scharo, how much is the schar, is the wage we are expected to pay the individuals featured in the Mishnah, those that you're hiring to make profit and split that profit, how much additional must you pay him? So the first opinion of Rebbe, that of Rebbe Meir, says Bein Ruba U Bein Muat Divrei Rebbe Meir. Literally, whether a lot or a little, that's enough. We'll be able to relate to Rebbe Meir's opinion in a moment after we read Rebbe Yehuda and then turn to the Rashi. Rebbe Yehuda Oimer, afilu l'toval imoy elo betzir, if all the hired person did was dip his food in some of your fish brine, or v'lo ochal imoy elo grogeres achas zeus choro, or he ate with you one fig, you gave him one dried fig, that's enough, that's his wages. Reb Shimon ben Yochai Omer, noisin lo yischoro mushlam. Reb Shimon ben Yochai says you have to pay him a full salary, or full wage. Now we look at Rashi, three lines from the top. Reb Yehuda mekel tfei min Reb Yehuda. Even though Rebbe Meir said you pay him whether it's a lot or a little. Rabbi Yehuda is even more lenient. The Rabbi Meir, boy shiyifsok l'shum schar. Rabbi Meir says there has to be a formal arrangement between original owner and hired individual that he is going to be paid a wage. Umiu b'chol mashios l'kabel of b'schoro. However, whatever he's willing to accept as his sachar, as his fee, bein rav, bein ma'at, whether it's a lot or a little, he accepts it. And that's an agreement. But a formal wage agreement must be reached. Rabbi Yehuda has no such requirement. You don't have to have a formal arrangement. It's enough that he comes along, this hired worker, and comes along and has a little snack with you, just like any outsider would come. That is considered as if you paid him. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai said, you pay him schoro mushlam, a full wage, but Rashi adds, very importantly, kepoyel botel. Doesn't mean a full wage in the sense of a full salary as a stranger that was hired to do this, because after all, this guy is going to be sharing in the profits as well. So what do you pay him? You pay him the poyel botel rate that we described earlier. Tonu Rabbonon. Ein shaman lo es ha'izim v'lo es ha'rechilim. Shaman, again, is a reference to the point we've mentioned many times in today's shiur, the idea of establishing a formal assessment of value on goats, nor on sheep, and you're going to be raising them and eventually sharing in the profits. In addition to sharing the profits, the worker is going to return the principal value that was assessed, so that's not allowed. V'lo kol davar she'eino oisav eichol l'mechza, nor any other kind of creature or thing that doesn't produce in terms of work, it doesn't produce profit, and then expect to share in the increased value. Rashi says, "V'lo kol dover shein oisav eichel, avol oisav eichel." Animals that work and, let's say, produce value, kegoin para hachireshes, like a para, a cow or an ox that plows fields, v'chamor atayenes masui, or a donkey that serves as a beast of burden, pulosan. Who schar omol umozon? Their work serves as the schar, as the payment for services, and its food. But creatures that don't have that characteristic, like goats and sheep, so you cannot assign a fixed principal value and then share in the profits. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shomin Esoizim. It says, with regard to goats, you can do that. You can assign a principal value. They produce milk, and the milk production will be something that will be like payment to the worker. He will benefit from that milk. Vesor Rechelim as well, their principal value can be established at the outset. But Neshigoizizois, Veshoitfois, Umortos, they produce wool that can be shorn. Or Shotfos is a reference to wool hairs that fall off, become detached when the animal is in water. Mortos is a reference to fibers, wool fibers that are detached from the animal when it encounters thorns. The esatarnegolis, the idea of shaman, according to Rabbi Yosef Yehuda, is acceptable when it comes to chickens. You'll ask, why is that allowed? But meishehi oisav oicheles, because it produces eggs, and those eggs can serve as the fee for the services. Gemara asks, in light of Reb Yossi Reb Yehuda, regarding the Tanakama, v'Tanakama Giza v'chol of lo sipek l'schar amolo umezono, the shearings of the sheep and the milk produced by the goats is not enough to serve as the wage for his efforts and food requirements. So the Gemara says, "Begiza v'cholov kulei alma lo pligi." Regarding that, everyone agrees that if the owner of the animal would be willing to forego those things to the benefit of the worker, fine. Let us assume, though, that he is not foregoing of those things. Ki pligi, the machlokes between Rabbi Yosef Yehuda and the Tanakama will arise concerning Benesubi Vatutri. Let us, Nesubi is we call whey. Tutri is a reference to the fibers that fall off other than the shorn wool. Rashi says it refers to the fibers of wool that come off in the water or that are caught on thorns. The worker, if he keeps the milk whey or these wool fibers, is that sufficient to constitute a wage? Tanakama sovar lo k'Rabbi Shimon ben Yochoi. The Tanakama holds like Rabbi Shimon ben Yochoi that we saw earlier. D'omar noisin leischoru mushlam. The Tanakama in this source agrees with the stringent opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochoi that we saw in the previous source. Now, we have a little arrow to help you find above where you saw Rabbi Shimon ben Yochoi, who says that he has to be paid a respectable fee. We call it schoro mushlam kepoyel botel. Rabbi Yosi Rebuta, sovalo kavua diomar. Rabbi Yosi Rebuta, Rabbi Yosi is the son of Rebuta. Rebuta appeared in that previous source. He was the number two opinion. That's the Omar Fiulo Tovali Moyala Bitsir Veloyochali Moyala Gregeris Achas Zehushar. Even if something is given to this worker as insignificant as dipping some food in brine and eating it, dipping something of the owner's food of the owner in some fish brine, or eating the owner's one dried fig, that's his wage. So too, the milk whey and wool fibers is enough. So Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, who represents the shita that Nesubi and Tutri is enough, is coming on the heels of his father that said Tovali Mo Bitsir or Ochali Gregasachas is enough. Tanu Rabbonon. We have another Tanaic source opening with an example that will be explained in Rashi that we'll see in a little while. Maskeres isha lechaverta tanegelis b'shnei efroichim. Literally, it means a woman can hire out or rent out a chicken to be paid two chicks a year. Again, we'll try to explain that in Rashi momentarily. We go on, though, in the source. Isha she'omra lechaverta, tanegelu shili ubeitzim shilichi. A woman who says to her friend, well, there's my chicken here, and these are your eggs over there. Vanivat nachloik befrochim, and we'll split in the chicks produced from the eggs. In other words, my chicken will incubate your eggs, and we'll split in the chicks that eventually are produced. Rabbi Yehuda matir, Rabbi Shimon oser. Rabbi Yehuda allows that, and Rabbi Shimon prohibits it. The Gemara will ask, how can Rabbi Yehuda allow that? What about the issue of paying the additional wage? We'll get to that in Mirtz Hashem in a while. Let's first turn to the Rashi. Isha Shamra, we're looking at Rashi almost halfway down the Rashi commentary. Isha Shiyeshlo Tarnagoles, a woman who owns a chicken. Muteris Loimar Labalas Abetzin, she can say to the owner of eggs, Tini li beitzim, give me your eggs, ve'oishiv tarnegilis aleim, and I'll have my chicken incubate them, ve'etrach befroichim, and I'll trouble myself to tend to the chicks, ve'etol shnei efroichim b'schori, and I will take two chicks as my fee. That is okay. That is what Rashi terms Loshon Schirus. And we saw in the Tanaic source, Maskeres Isha. That, we'll call that form of business arrangement is allowed. Avol. Beloshon Chaluka Pligi Ba, if the arrangement is in a Chaluka fashion, there we have a disagreement between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. The Ka'asa Rabbi Shimon. And that, Rabbi Shimon says, is not allowed. Chaluka literally means splitting. The Chaloshan Chaluka Iska Hi. When you have an arrangement that we call Chaluka, that falls into the category of Iska, Ukroiva Lehefsid Kishar. It is a situation where the chances of loss and the chances of profit are balanced, are equal. The kevon d'achrayis chatzi beitzim olea, and here's the key point, the key problem. The owner of the chicken is going to become obligated in an unconditional fashion regarding half the eggs, the half the eggs she's given to incubate. Ishtakach palgamilve, and since she's obligated in an unconditional fashion regarding half of the eggs, that is viewed as a loan. And as we've seen before, that kind of arrangement where you will be returning principal value plus profit as a result of having received a loan, part of what you received was a loan, you're returning more than you received, there you've got a problem of ribis. That is all because it was in the Loshon Chaluka. Avo b'loshon schirus, ein achrayes habeitzim al balas atarnegilos. And here is the key point. All of this was something you could not have possibly seen in the words of the Gemara, but in the schirus arrangement, I want to say hire, rent out my chicken for incubating your eggs. In a case like that, the owner of the chicken is not accepting unconditional responsibility regarding the eggs. But in the Chaluka fashion, where you saw in the Tanaic source, it said, Vanivat nachloik befroikim, in a range like that, Rashi spelled out that that's an iska form of association between the two. An iska, which we explained already numerous times, is a 50% or partial loan. Rabbi Yehuda in the source was matir that. And now we ask, Rabbi Yehuda lo boi schar amolo mazono. We saw before so many times that if you have an iska form relationship, the worker, the in this case the owner of the chicken that's going to incubate the eggs, she's going to be troubling herself. She needs to get a fee. So the Gemara says she gets a fee in the form of ika beitzim muzoros. That's a reference to eggs that don't actually develop. They're the term used for those kind of eggs after they've been incubated but don't develop. They're called beitzim muzoros. And some people who have a solid constitution, whether it's physical or psychological, will eat those kind of eggs. Rabbi Yehuda says that is sufficient to serve as the schar. And it's Rashi points out, Rabbi Yehuda in saying that is consistent with what he said before of even afilo tovelimo ela betzir velo ochalimo ela grugeras achas. That is enough. So that this form of payment, that the owner of the chicken will be able to keep the beitzim muzoros, which are rather insignificant, but that's enough. That's fine, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to serve as the schar. Tonu Rabbonon. Mokoim shenoagu lahalois schar kosef lemois lebehemo malin. Rashi. The Rashi you'll notice is right across from here. Mokum shenagu lahalo ischar kosef lemois lebehemo malin. Mokum shenagu she ha shom. The word shom again is a reference to assigning an assessed value to agolam usyochim tanim lemechsel lechavero. Where that was the practice, where calves and young donkeys were assessed, and the party raising them would then share in the profits. Noisein loy mois bischar shemotzion umachnisen al ksefoy malin. If it's a place where the fee was paid in cash for his efforts in carrying out and bringing them in. These are young animals, so he would have to schlep them on his shoulders. So that would be how they're paid. The Gemara goes on, the ain mishanin miminag medina. And whatever the practice is, that is what is maintained. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer Shomin Egel im imo Usyoch im imo. What that means is, if someone is going to be tending to a mother animal along with its offspring, the mother, the cow, and a calf, the syoch, the young donkey with its mother. In a case like that, there is no separate payment needed for the care of the offspring. We'll call it the schlepping charge is not necessary to cover, because the animal will go in and out together with its parent. Then that is true even in a place where the practice was to pay the schlepping fee when they were evaluated independently on their own. But when the parent is there, so then that fee that was featured here at the beginning of this source need not be paid. The Gemara asks, Rav Shimon Gamliel, lo boy schar amolo mazono? Does Rav Shimon Gamliel not necessitate, does he not obligate the need for paying the wage that we discussed before for his efforts and providing food for the animals? Where does Rav Shimon Leo make any reference to a wage? So the Gemara answers, Iko glolim. The dung that the animal produces will be kept by the worker. That will serve as his wage. From the fact that Rav Shimon ben Gamliel says that when the offspring is with the mother, so then the schar kosef need not be paid, the Tanakama apparently disagreed. And here the Gemara, after asking concerning Rav Shimon Gamliel, what, you're not going to have to pay for the schar kosef when it's along with the parent, what about the basic schar that you need for paying someone to tend to the animals? So we answered, the worker keeps the glolim, he keeps the dung. The Tanakama, though, we mentioned, doesn't see it like that. V'idoch, glolim afguri mifkar lehu. The glolim is something that people, renounce ownership of them. It's something it's extremely insignificant. And hence, he requires something of more significance to be paid. My understanding of this is that according to the Tanakama, the worker himself isn't even going to keep the glolim. He'll let them be taken by anyone from the general public. So what is he going to receive as pay? Hence, we saw in the Reisha, the beginning part of this source, you have to pay him a separate fee. Omar Rav Nachman. Here we have Rav Nachman issuing rulings concerning points mentioned earlier. Halacha Krib Yehuda. He rules that as far as payment for efforts that the one who's raising the animals exerts, it's enough, even Toval Imo Betzir that we saw before. Halacha Krib Yosi Krib Yehuda. Payment can be in terms of the milkway and fibers, the we'll call tutri, the fibers falling off in water or caught on thorns. Valocha karabon shimon leo, that we just saw regarding the wage or fee being paid in terms of the animal dung. Before we continue in the Gemara, we have a topic heading, a nose, under which we've written Maisa im Shtar, Shinirash Ravilish, Osa Iska, Palga Ba'agar, Palga Behefsid. We'll see a contract where initially it appears that Rav Elish entered an agreement where half is where the realization of profit and possible loss were equal. She'osir lasos mishum ribis. You cannot have a situation where the chance of profit and loss are on equal footing, and then and simply the split the profits. We'll see more about this as we go in on the Gemara. B'nei Rav Elish nafak alayu haushtara. The children of Rav Elish were party to a contract to have a kosiv be palga ba'agar palga behefsid, which means a shtar indicating that their father had received merchandise, palga ba'agar and palga behefsid. In order to appreciate this, we'll take a look at Rashi. Nafak alayu shtar shekibo vim iska palga ba'agar upalga behefsid, whereby there would be a sharing of the profits and a sharing of the possible loss. This is the same arrangement, simply in different words, that we have seen throughout today's shiur, where palga ba'agar, they'll split the profits, concerning merchandise that he accepted unconditional responsibility of half the loss. In other words, if the merchandise goes bad, is ruined, he will pay, even if the circumstances are onus, he will pay half of it. Now, we have learned already extensively that that is a problematic situation. Omar Rava, so Rava said, Rav Elish, Gavra Rabahu. Rav Elish was a great man. V'isur le'inshi lo have sofi. Rav Elish wouldn't have accepted an arrangement like that, which in turn would have resulted in his literally feeding people that which is forbidden, namely by giving back the principal value plus half the profits to the owner of that merchandise. He would have been giving him interest. Rav Elish was a very pious man. He wouldn't have entered an arrangement where the result is he's giving the balabayas interest. Therefore, what must have been the arrangement, monafshach, what must have been the arrangement is as follows. Ipalga ba'agar, if they were going to split the profits, half-half, then trei tilsi behefsid, the balabayas was willing to accept upon himself two-thirds of the losses. So that in the case of loss, Rav Elish would have had to compensate only one-third. So you see that the profit, one-half, is more than he would have had to compensate in the case of loss. That extra amount of profit will serve as the schar, the wage that we discussed earlier, that the worker needs to be paid in order to avoid the isur of ribis. So either the arrangement was half wage, half profits, and Balabayas would absorb two-thirds of the losses, if that would be. We continue at the top of Daf Samach Tes. Ipalga behefsid, or if you say that Rav Ilish and the Balabayas were going to split the issue of loss equally, then Trey Tilsibaga, then Rav Ilish would have stood to profit two-thirds of the profits. What we have to ensure, as you can see, is that the amount of profit exceeds the amount of loss. Omar Rav Kahana, Amriso Lishmaitza Kamei the Rav Zvid Mihardo. So Rav Kahana said, I said over this that we just learned to Rav Zvid from the Hardov Amarli, and Rav Zvid said, Dilma, Rav Ilish Toivel Imoi Butzir Have. Why view the original possibility as a problem? Let us say that it was an arrangement where Rav Zvid would share the profits with the owner, and Rav Zvid would accept half the principal in an unconditional sense of responsibility. And as far as the wage is concerned, well, Rav Ilish was a case of dipping in the fish brine. V'yomer Rav Nachman halacha k'Rebuda, and we saw that Rav Nachman ruled like Rebuda, that that's a legitimate form of wage which circumvents the problem of ribis, as long as the worker is getting paid something in addition to the profits. We say that that's his payment for producing the profits on behalf of the Balabayas. Hence, the ribis problem is avoided. So maybe that's what happened. Omar Lay. So Rav Kahana answers what Rav Zvid was asking. Rav Kahana answers, Lav Hilchisa Itmar. Rav Nachman did not rule like Rav Yehuda. He didn't say Haloch Rav Yehuda, Ela Shita Itmar. When Rav Nachman, which you can see, by the way, we have an arrow back to Samaches Amid Beis, where Rav Nachman appeared saying, okay, in the words of the Gemara, we say, Haloch Rabbi Yehuda, Haloch Rabbi Yehuda. He wasn't ruling that that is the halacha, but rather he was saying that these Tanoim, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, are all of the same school of thought. That's what Rav Nachman's point was. Hachi Nami Mistabro. It's also likely that that was Rav Nachman's purpose. Namely, he wasn't coming to issue a halachic ruling, but rather to say that they all were of a similar school of thought. Namely, that the schar that you pay to the higher hand could be something of a rather minimal or negligible nature. Dilo te mahachi. If you're not going to say that, but rather you're going to insist that Rav Nachman, back on Samaches Amud Beis, was issuing a halachic ruling, then lomalei lemechshav lemeimar halocha halocha. Why does Rav Nachman have to spell out each time he presents the next Tanaic opinion? He adds halocha like. He said three times. He said halocha like Rav Yehuda, then halocha like Rav Yehuda, halocha like Rav Shlomo Leah. Why does he have to say it like that? Lema, he would have been simple enough for Rav Nachman to say halocha Rav Yehuda to make omikulu. Just say the halocha is like Rav Yehuda, which is the least of all the opinions, least in terms of value of what you're paying him. You're giving, according to Rav Yehuda, it's enough to give him one dried fig. That's his schar. And certainly the whey and the detached fibers and the feces would certainly constitute a payment. But yet Rav Nachman didn't take that approach. He didn't simply say halacha like Rav Yehuda and that's it. But he said halachas like this one and halachas like that one and halachas like that one. He was trying to communicate the idea that all of these tanoim are of the same school of thought, that a minimum amount of wage is enough. And but as far as Rav Nachman himself is concerned, he wasn't issuing that we follow, that we accept any of those opinions in actual halachic terms. And therefore, it was necessary to reinterpret the Rav Ilish Iska arrangement, in which a shtar said palga b'agor, palga behefsid, really meant if it was half agor, half profit to be shared between Rav Ilish and the merchandise owner, then the merchandise owner would have had to accept upon himself 2/3 of the potential loss. And if it was the arrangement was that the original owner and Rav Zvid would share in the loss, that's half loss, then Rav Zvid would have had to be entitled to 2/3 of the profit, as we explained. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.